Coming up next on The Social Hour, SoundCloud hits a milestone. Twitter starts acting a lot more like Facebook. And why would you want to take a front-back photo on your phone? The answer may surprise you. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 135, recorded October 31st, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour1113. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code SocialHour11. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. From Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Vancouver, British Columbia, so I'm finally on the same time zone as you, Sarah.
Hey, how does it feel? 5:15 p.m. for all of our live viewers, well, that are on Pacific time.
Well, you know what? It's actually a little bit stressful because every day I wake up, I feel like I'm already 3 or 4 hours behind on work because most people I work with are in the Eastern time zone. So it's a bit of an adjustment, but I'm sure, you know, for anyone who lives there normally, it's not such a big deal. But it's beautiful out here in Vancouver, and I'm just crossing my fingers that my internet works for me for the whole show.
I am too. We had a little hiccup before the show, but you're looking fabulous. The connection seems to be holding. So we'll certainly hope for the best. You know, it's funny that you mention just the kind of time zone weirdness. I do find that, yeah, I mean, I'm almost always on the West Coast. That's where I am most of the time. But when I travel to the East Coast or even to Europe, where obviously I'm way ahead, it's amazing how something like my social stream changes on Twitter. You know, in New York, for example, you wake up and at 8 a.m., you really just kind of have the trickle of the you know, maybe the European journalists who have posted some stories from earlier in the day. I mean, this, of course, it totally depends on who you're following and where your network mostly is. And then you've kind of got the New York people talking about the morning. And then it doesn't even really get going until about noon when the West Coast people wake up and they start talking about their morning. And it's fascinating to time shift yourself a little bit because there's such a real-time aspect of social that changes when you're out of your kind of comfort zone.
Yeah, it. You're definitely right. I mean, the first night I was out here, I actually got up at 4 a.m. and I felt like, okay, this is totally ridiculous. But I knew it was 7 a.m. back at the East Coast, so I was following along with my friends there who were on Twitter and in Toronto, and I knew we were waking up at around the same time. But it is a bit of an adjustment to get used to it. But I'm okay. It's a much more laid back place out here than it is in Toronto. So I'm just trying to slow down, Sarah. See how that goes. And well, I'm missing Halloween, which is craziness, but it's all good.
Well, yeah, I am too. I don't know. I was going to try to make some funny joke about Halloween, but I don't have anything. I wore orange. That's what I did. So I'm a pumpkin.
What about the
person.
Outfit you mentioned last week that you may or may not wear? That didn't happen?
No, I just lost interest. My friends and I all lost interest. We saw each other on Tuesday and everyone's like, do you really want to do that? No, let's just not. So I think after this, I'm going to go home and watch a movie and go to sleep early.
Woo! Yeah.
Well, at least I'm honest. All right, let's get into our news of the week, quite a bit of it, but we have some standouts. First one is kind of just a mention, really. SoundCloud, which is certainly a social network that's music-based. It allows, you know, artists to find and distribute, for people to find, learn about new artists and for artists to distribute original songs and kind of gather a community and be able to release tracks. For a long time, I kind of thought of SoundCloud as like where DJs hung out, but it's all sorts of music now. They've hit 250 million monthly active users, which is kind of significant because just back in, I think it was June, maybe July, they were just at 200. So they're certainly growing at a nice clip. And they've added a little feature where you can use an Instagram photo, something that's already on Instagram, to maybe, I don't know, connect it to a particular song or maybe for album art. It's just it's a nice little touch between those two companies. Amber, what do you think about SoundCloud? Do you ever hang out there?
I don't. I do think this is kind of interesting, though, Sarah, the idea that you were able to essentially, based on what this article says, you're replacing album art with images that you may like from Instagram, perhaps. And it is kind of neat to look at this from the user-generated content perspective and think about, you know, 25 years ago when people spent so much time creating amazing album covers, all of a sudden people are just, you know, changing them like they change their socks, right? They're just not really caring as much anymore. So I like the idea that they're allowing people to kind of customize that experience. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who use it who will definitely take advantage of it.
Absolutely. You know, there's we may have talked about it on the show before. I know we had Steve Jang, who's the CEO of Soundtracking, which is a social network that allows you to basically, it's sort of like an Instagram update, but for music, based on what you're listening to, and you can scan a song that you're hearing or add it in. But they had a feature recently where you take an Instagram. You check in on Soundtracking, you add a photo to it, and then you can post over to Instagram, which is kind of an interesting idea. And I feel like this offering from SoundCloud is kind of along those same lines, is the companies are getting to the point where they realize there is some sort of a visual element when you connect it to a song that can be really pleasing for everybody. Why not add an image to a song? I mean, in the old way of doing things was like, you have an image for an album cover. Well, why not have an image for as many things as you want?
Now, here's another story we've been talking a lot about, Sarah. Reports have been coming out in terms of teens leaving Facebook. Not necessarily a news story, but what's interesting is recently Facebook has admitted that there is a decrease in usage among teens. And it's really the first time that they've come out and been so honest about this.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Facebook had its earnings report, which came out yesterday, quarterly earnings. All big publicly traded companies do this. And among a lot of revenue and numbers and this and that is the trend that teenagers maybe aren't as interested in Facebook as before. And I think that this is really interesting because even though Facebook's numbers continue to grow, let's be honest, if you're trying to be, you know, mankind's largest social network ever, it's really, really important to be hooking into the youngest set possible. And if those people don't want to hang out on Facebook, well, what chance do you really have to get them in 10, 20 years? Grandparents being on Facebook is fine and good, but, you know, teens are going to live longer and be on your network more and contribute to, you know, your advertising revenue. So I wonder how much of this is possibly just kind of a cyclical thing and how much of this is Facebook kind of freaking out and saying, we've built a tool that's not cool enough for the young people who are the ones who certainly help drive trends.
I mean, I think there is that risk. You know, Facebook is getting older, and in the article in TechCrunch, they talk a lot about competition out there from services like Snapchat. I mean, we've had this conversation not every week on the Social Hour, but we talk about it a lot. And we know that teens are preferring to go other places, maybe where their content disappears entirely, or they try to get rid of it. And Facebook is a place where
You cut out a tiny bit there, Amber.
And grandparents are, and they don't know anymore. And I think they're also from. I think a lot of teens are switching social networks more quickly today than they ever have. And I wonder if there'll ever be a Facebook again where people will stay for any extended period of time.
Yeah, I don't know either. It'll be interesting to see what the next couple of quarters do. Because, yeah, I mean, if high school kids want to hang out on Snapchat, which I know that they do. I also do, even though I'm certainly not a teen. It's fun. And closing off lockdown Instagram accounts. Amber and I talk about this all the time. So it's interesting. If you don't have teens, well, who do you have? I mean, children aren't supposed to be on Facebook, right? So at what point does it just become some sort of a free-for-all and all the toddlers are getting marketed to?
And it's funny, though, Sarah, you mentioned you're on Snapchat. Just, I think, 2 days ago, I was talking to someone. He's in his 40s. He says he uses Snapchat all the time now. And I wonder if teens are going to start leaving Snapchat because all of a sudden, you know, there are people who are older who are using it and it will just not be cool anymore. Because I do find there is an older generation that's using Snapchat and it's not just kids. And I'm seeing that every week I hear someone who maybe is in their 30s or 40s who's using it. And it just seems like that's the first thing to drive the teens away. They absolutely hate that.
You know, Snapchat, the weirdest thing happened to me the other day. So it's like, I don't really have that many Snapchat friends and we're always sending each other silly pictures. It's not really a useful tool for me. It's just a kind of a fun tool. But a friend of mine and I, we were like, yeah, let's be Snapchat friends. And he says, here's my Snapchat name, you know, so you can find me, because I couldn't find him in my contacts. And I found him. And then when you click on his name, because he has to accept me and I have to accept him. It has to be a two-way street in order for us to send snaps to each other. But before he accepted me, all I had done is search for him. I found his name. You click on it and it expands to show who his best friends are. It's kind of how Snapchat works. Yeah. I could show you. Could I show you this without kind of giving away someone's privacy? Let's see if I could do it for myself. That would be okay, I think. Yeah, okay. So if you look at, that's me up top, right? And this is, you know, this is sort of a weird example because that is me. But if you click on me, you see that I've got like the people that I've Snapchatted most recently the most. Well, that's not a big deal. I mean, I'm just looking at myself and I can see that for the other people that I'm connected to. But if somebody hasn't added you yet and you already know who their like best friends are, and maybe it's somebody that you think, that's a little scandalous. It's a lot of information to have before you've ever accepted anybody. Just saying.
Yeah, that's a good point. It reminds me a little bit. Do you remember in the MySpace days, Sarah, where you had your top friends?
Oh yeah. It's very much like that.
Yeah. Could you change your top friends though? You could decide. It wasn't generated on how much you were interacting with them. It was actually something you picked those people.
It was like a popularity contest.
Yeah.
Your top friends were the ones that you liked the most, and you could, you know, that was the reason it got so much attention, because it would be, you know, you get swapped out. And all of a sudden, you know, Amber, I'm not in Amber's top friends. And then it turns into like, well, Amber's mad at me. And this is her passive aggressive way of telling me that. And I'm really glad those days are over. That was right around the time, Amber, where I was like, MySpace is just not fun. I hate it here.
I know. I'm so with you. Now, some interesting things happening with Twitter. The big one, and I've noticed this in my stream using the web version of Twitter, that people's images, if they're posting them through Twitter, are now available to be able to be viewed in the feed, so you don't have to click on a link. I'm really undecided in terms of how I feel about this, Sarah. I kind of like it, but I think it could get too much too quickly.
Yeah, I had a sort of a heated debate with somebody about this the other day, because they were of the mind that, Anthony, if you want to like just like pull up some sort of a Twitter page on web Twitter, we can use it as an example. But Anthony's running the boards for Brian today, back in the background. But the friend of mine was like, I should have the option of being able to sort of read the text truncated version of Twitter. I'm in a hurry, or that's just the way I like to do it, and be able to expand on a case-by-case basis, just depending on who's sending the tweet, how often they tweet, what kind, you know, if somebody's always adding images, I should be able to be selective about that. And it's like, okay, I understand that in a way, it's Twitter forcing something that you could consider a little messy. Yeah, so that's my feed, and I, you know, you're seeing stuff that I've shared, and it's just expanded by default now. Well, I guess my whole thing is, if somebody is adding media on such a regular basis that it's really bugging you, you do have the option to not follow that person. Now, I know that sometimes these things are political, and that's not always the answer, but in general, I feel like I'd rather just see all the media that I'm going to have to click on to expand anyway up front, and it's not that hard to scroll past it still. Maybe I just like most of my information up front.
It's interesting, though, because there is so much competition right now with social networks that are image-based. You know, you have Pinterest, you have Tumblr, you have Snapchat. And so I think for Twitter, it is the right move to have more images in the stream, because I do think they have to compete at that level. Because I think when we look at social media, it's all going towards visual images. So I don't know. I mean, as much as you may not like it, I think this was just bound to happen.
I think so too. I really just, I'm not sure why people are so upset about it. I understand wanting to be able to customize your own feed. And others have said, listen, this is just the beginning of advertisers being able to shove something that's an image in our face. And we're used to it already, because that's just the way that it works for everybody who's sharing photos and videos. And we don't know that that's going to happen, but that's probably a pretty safe assumption. So there's that, too. And again, this is kind of the future of a company that wants to make a lot of money and is about to have its IPO. So that's what's going on with Twitter. But let us know what you think. Some of you might have some ideas or some views that we haven't discussed yet. So let us know. The Social Hour at twit.tv. Moving on to Google+, the social network that Amber and I try our very best to cover as much as possible, even though we're not huge Google+ users, got quite a few updates, actually. Google+ team on, what day was it, Tuesday? I think it was Tuesday, had a little event where they talked about all sorts of new features that are currently already available on Android and coming to the iOS Google+ apps soon. You've got stuff like full-size backups for your photos. You've got some enhancements to the photo tools. Google+ bought Snapseed last year, and there are some like HDR effects and something that they call Auto Awesome that's apparently supposed to help it out quite a bit. And, you know, some visual elements. There's stuff about the Google+ timeline as well and how things look. Amber, and we covered this on Tech News Today earlier this week. When I see a bunch of Google+ enhancements, I'm like, well, okay, this is the perfect time for me to jump back in there and see how it's all going. But, you know, it never really changes the community. So I think sometimes some fun enhancements that do make the Google+ product better for me are fine, but fleeting.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the stat is, but I was reading recently and it said basically there was a surge in the number of people who had signed up for Google+ in the past couple of months. Mm. So I thought that was kind of interesting to see. You know, it wasn't incremental. It was a significant number, and I'll track down the story somewhere. But, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I don't think these things are really that interesting in the sense that you can do a lot of this stuff through basic apps. The Auto Awesome Eraser allows you to essentially erase someone. Let's say if they walk in front of your shot, you can erase that in your image so your shot looks better. Well, they have some of these features built into some new smartphones. I mean, none of this stuff is really that new, and I don't think it's going to be able to keep the community there necessarily. It does have to be about the people who are there and about the content at the end of the day. So they're just kind of, seems like they're just sort of little tweaks to excite people, but nothing too significant in this recent update.
Yeah, it did seem like an event that was, it's certainly very cool for the team. And if there are certain features like being able to have full-size backups of photos, if you're using Google+ on iOS, that's a huge, huge help. But yeah, incremental changes. All right, before we get into some of our tips and our spotlights of the week, let's take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Social media solutions from SAP helps companies use social media so that they can improve their customer service and support. That's what you want to do, right? Conversations are happening about brands all the time. In fact, I can think of one specific brand who recently came out with a specific video, and people had a lot of things to say about it. You might know which company I'm talking about. I mean, people on both sides of the fence on that. Whether they're commenting, whether they're happy, whether they're complaining, it happens on Twitter, it happens on Facebook, it happens on personal blogs, it happens on review sites. Sometimes it happens in sort of, I don't know, kind of random places. So you just have to stay on top of that. If you work in social media, it can be a challenge. So Social Media Solutions from SAP has two components. The listening component, that's where you gather all the information. You try to make some sense of it. Okay, who's angry? What are they saying about our competitors? How do we help, figure out who's in need of some technical support or who needs something clarified before they want to buy our product? And then the engaging component helps you reach back out to those people. You can drive sales by helping somebody with a question, solve customer problems, respond to customer feedback rapidly enough that somebody walks away saying, wow, that company was really on top of it. I mean, they came and found me. I didn't have to go and find them. I mean, talk about a happy customer. Somebody tweets a technical support problem, you can get to the right person on your team right away, fix the problem through social media, and everybody's happy. And of course, if there's a negative review about your company, you can reach out and let them know you care. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. Go to sap.com/twit and take a guided tour to see for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works and can work for your company as well. That's sap.com/twit. And thanks, SAP, for sponsoring this episode of our show. All right, Amber, what is going on with something called Pinstamatic? That sounds like a mashup of lots of things.
It's pretty cool. You know, Sarah, I've been trying to use Pinterest more and more. And in fact, I have quite a bit of stuff there now. And I'm really, it's just total experimentation, just trying things out to see what kind of works, what makes sense for me to make different boards, what to include there. And I stumbled across this tool for people who are using Pinterest, and it allows you to do things like simply take a website URL or maybe someone's Twitter handle or a quote and make them look good on Pinterest. So a really simple tool to basically enhance those things you want to post to Pinterest that aren't going to look that good in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of my biggest challenges. You know, I'm not a photographer. I don't have a lot of photos, but maybe there are articles I want to share or websites, and this just kind of makes them look pretty so they fit into the Pinterest world.
This is such a great idea.
It's really cute.
I absolutely love it. Do we know who made this?
I have no idea. I was hoping it was an app, but I mean, it is. I mean, it's a web app, but I was hoping they had an app as well, but it doesn't seem like they do yet. Even things like quotes, if you want quotes to look good, You can drop a quote in there. It will look really nice. So really handy if you want to start using Pinterest and you want to just make stuff look better than it probably does and you don't have a lot of photos at hand.
Well, I absolutely love this. This is great, especially because, Pinterest is all about being inspired. I know that word is really overused, but that's a big part of it. And the great thing about Pinterest is it's so visually driven. People love to hang out there because you're getting inspired by looking at stuff. Well, not everything that you're collecting is always a photo. Yeah, it could be a quote. It could be a variety of things. I love the idea of helping something that you really feel like could contribute to a Pinterest board that you're building for yourself, but it would look kind of weird or out of place or just ugly, make it look more Pinteresty.
Fit. You know, like one fun thing to do with this, which I haven't done yet on my Pinterest page, but I was thinking that I have some testimonials from people that I've done work with. Well, I could drop them into Pinstamatic, into the quote section, and I could create really pretty testimonials that people have either emailed me or tweeted me after speaking at an event. So it's a great way to kind of build your resume, but in a visual way. So that's where I think you have to be kind of creative about how you use the tool, but I think it'd be super beneficial to people who are new to Pinterest and maybe don't have their own Photoshop skills and don't have time to design too much.
Absolutely. This is great. So pinstamatic.com is the website to go and kind of see all the little choices you have. It's adorable. Of course, we'll have that in our show notes as well if you don't have time to write it down or you think you're going to forget. All right, we've got a couple spotlights, but the first one is an app that, Amber, I have heard about for a while. It's called Front Back, and I haven't really played around with it, although I keep seeing it sort of rise in popularity. What is it?
Yeah.
How does it work?
I really like this idea, and I've seen apps kind of like this before where they use both the front-facing camera and the back-facing camera, and it's really a way for you to be included in an image. So if you're going out with some friends and taking a picture of them sitting on a park bench, then you can also be in that photo. But I can imagine, I know there's a lot of people who are social media marketers listening to the show, and you want to figure out a way to take some creative pictures, and maybe you do want that different perspective. And you know what? To be honest with you, Sarah, I think it just has a a cute name too. I think it's going to do pretty well, and it seems like their numbers are definitely rising quickly. So just a different way to kind of do a selfie. I don't know what people are going to call that, because it's not just a selfie. You're going to be including other people, but I'm sure someone will think of something.
All right. Well, so I did make it seem like I've never used front back, and until half an hour ago, I hadn't. But while we were setting up for the show, I did take my first one where it's sort of hard to understand what's going on here, but the back camera was pointing into my iPad, where you got a little reflection here where you could see me taking the photo, and then I switched to the front view, which is me with Alex behind me, who was adjusting the camera that is trained on this iPhone right now. So this is a very meta picture in many, many ways, but it was pretty easy to put together. If I wanted to, you know, try another one, I go ahead and say, all right, well, let's see, okay, there we go. So that's me and Amber. Hello. And then it goes to, you know, this, like, you know. So there you have it. That's what I'm looking at, and what it sees back at me. But it's constructed pretty hastily. But at this point, I can add a caption. I can say where I am. I've got a variety of places that I could send it to, or just send it to a friend via SMS. Or I can just say, save that. Save that image for later. Maybe I'll do something with it later. Now, I haven't gone ahead and added this that's cool. I did that by accident. So you can decide what looks better here. Do I want to be above what I see? Or do I want to be below what I see? Okay, well, I just figured that out through trial and error. Go ahead and cancel. How do I get out of this? Delete photo? Okay. All right. So then at this point, I can go ahead and find friends, people that, you know, are on other social networks that I might be following, look at my profile. I really haven't added anything. Or I can go to, let's see if I can find the, yeah, okay, so this is just like cool photos that have made, you know, the editor's picks, the staff picks. This is somebody who was like matching himself up with looks like a Indonesian currency, somebody at the dentist. I mean, I think there's varying results, just the way that there is with any app that's kind of supposed to be artsy. It's a front back type of a thing, but I think you're supposed to try to be kind of creative with it.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
I feel like it's almost like the death of the selfie. I mean, I'm not saying this is going to be the next big thing, but I don't know, Sarah. I mean, I do selfies all the time, but I'm sort of sick of them, and you see them everywhere online. I mean, if I read another article where Beyonce has done some type of selfie, whatever the headline is, it just seems like, you know what? It's we've done it, right? And that's what I thought was neat about this. It's like the evolution of that. Okay, you're tired of just looking at one person. You can also see what that person is looking at, and I can see people getting really creative with it.
Yeah, I mean, this is this is a very pretty woman. I don't know how old she is. And it's like that photo just of her alone would be like, okay, whatever. There's not a lot of context there. Yeah. Well, it turns out she's on some sort of a bridge in what looks like a neat area. I don't know where. And it's just kind of cooler all of a sudden. These girls, and looks like they're doing some sort of a shoot. Cool again. Oh, they're at a restaurant that's actually supposed to be very good in Paris. I've heard of it. People at a game. And the list goes on. I don't understand how that one works. Oh, wait. Somebody else's legs? Something like that. So there you go. I'm going to go ahead and like that. I'm the 203rd person to like it. It's neat. It's a little bit more than, I would go ahead and say, there's a little bit more to it than I originally thought. It's well done.
And I think you'll see brands maybe starting to use it if it continues to rise in popularity, in the sense that they'll have a picture of something and then, you know, you'll be able to see that kind of the other side of the story. So they'll get creative with it. But I think it does let us see that other side of the story, right? So I think it's kind of fun and clever, and it's just interesting to see how creative people can get with it. And I'm hoping maybe it is the death of the selfie. Maybe. Well, although I'll probably keep taking selfies.
Or the evolution of it, at least.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the evolution.
The selfie grows up.
Exactly. And we get to see the other side of the story. And I can see this app definitely taking off and continuing to get lots of downloads.
All right, so moving on to our next spotlight. We mentioned earlier in the show that the Google Plus iOS apps, which I'm running the newest version of it on my iPad, do not have the enhancements that are already on the Android version, which is, that's very normal for Google Plus. I mean, it's, you know, Android is their, is the Google Plus operating system, so that all makes sense. But some of the features that came to, I mentioned Snapseed, which is owned by Google and is part of the Google Plus process. Some of those have actually been updated, and I've got Snapseed running on my iPad app. It has actually a really nice native iPad app. And you can see that it has added just a, you know, a couple things that can help you as a Snapseed photo editor if this is your app of choice. Snapseed is not right for everybody. I know people who are extremely frustrated with the way that it's laid out because it doesn't really work the way other apps do, but I find it easily one of the most robust editing tools if you're willing to kind of play around with it. Amber, do you use Snapseed much?
Yeah, I really like it, actually, and I find it quick to just jump in and do something relatively efficiently. So I find people do get frustrated as well, Sarah, especially if their expectation is that maybe there is even more functionality, but it's fairly basic.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's, you can get the hang of it. All right, so there's a picture I took of me and my cat Lucy. I think that was yesterday or the day before or something like that. And yeah, it's not a very good picture. It's sort of, it's framed weirdly and it's kind of dark and doesn't look all that great. So I can see over on the left-hand side, I've got a couple little updated banners on Tune Image and then something called HDRscape. Now, the Google Plus team made a big deal about HDRscape earlier this week when they were talking about it because a lot of us have become familiar with HDR. Whoa, oh my goodness. As a way to enhance your photo and kind of give it an ethereal quality. There are certain photographers who really, really rely on HDR kind of as their, it's particularly good for landscapes, and you know, we all are somewhat familiar with that. Well, Google Plus says that they've got HDR, so let's go ahead and bring this filter way down, give myself a little bit more stuff to work with. HDRscape is giving me just sort of more tools. Usually with HDR, it's kind of like, do you want it on or off? So it's very dramatic or you don't use it at all. This gives you a variety of tools. Now, when I say that Snapseed is sometimes a challenge for people to use, this is exactly why. Because you tap on the photo and then you've got some of these options of what to do with it based on what you choose. And then you use your finger to scroll and you can see that if I wanted to smooth the image, you know, in certain increments, you know, I start at zero and I can go all the way up to 100 if, for example, it seems kind of grainy. But this is pretty nice because, again, you just have a lot more options when you're working with something that's pretty specific, like an HDR filter. You know, I don't know if this is the perfect filter for this particular image, but it's kind of fun to play around with. So this is something that even if you're an iOS user and you're like, Google Plus, whatever, that those new features haven't come to me, you can enjoy right now if you have the Snapseed standalone app.
Yeah, I mean, and say then again, Sarah, you know, it goes back to images, right? I mean, everybody's trying to win this image game across social networks, and here's just another example of it. So it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, there's just so many social networks out there that are just pushing images front and center, and it's going to be neat to see who kind of wins that race.
Absolutely, yeah. I love Snapseed. Oh, man. I mean, sometimes it's just like, oh, that's one of the most fun things on my iPad. That's why I love my photo stream so much is because, you know, you just get all these pictures in and then you can just start playing around with them. All changes will be lost.
Messing around with them.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But I won't do that right now because we're going to take a moment to thank Shutterstock instead for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love talking about Shutterstock because, well, I mean, it's just the perfect place to find an image or a video for any sort of creative project that you're putting together. Maybe it's for your website. Maybe you put together a really interesting video or you're working on one, some sort of a publication, an advertisement of sorts. You can choose from over 1 million high-quality stock video clips. We'll just talk about videos today. 2D or 3D animation, motion graphics, lots of digital formats if you need something specific. If you want to search for, yeah, say, I don't know, what are you searching for, wineries or grapes or something like that? I mean, this is video that, as a Shutterstock customer, is available to use for you to use, and you just drop it into your project. You can search by keyword or even by color or emotion. It really drills down. It's kind of fun. And the stuff is just really well done. These are professional videographers that are contributing, and Shutterstock vets all of the videos that they get. So they're not going to put a bunch of junk that you have to wade through and think, oh, God, every once in a while there's something great on Shutterstock, but not usually. It's awesome. You can choose from over 1 million of them, and Shutterstock adds over 12,000 video clips each week. That is a huge library that is growing at a very, very quick speed. Individual clips or video packs, both available to you. You can download clips in HD, you know, if you're, we're all, it's an HD world out there, where you can save with standard def or web formats. You can save images and videos to a clip box. If Amber and I are collaborating on something, you know, we're not going to be in the same room anytime soon. I add a bunch of stuff to the clip box. She logs in. She can look at that, give me feedback. So it's great for collaborations as well. And you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. Just start an account. Start using Shutterstock. Imagine what your next project could be like with all of these great videos. Save some video selections to your clip box. Share them with others. Once you decide to purchase, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1113. So that's SOCIALHOUR1113. And new accounts will receive 25% off.
It's a good deal.
Really good deal. 25%, guys. A quarter. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1113. They really want to make you work for it. So Don't forget. All right, Amber, what do you say we get into some of our viewer feedback? By the way, our email account is working again.
Yay!
I know. We had some Google Apps issues on our end. It's not even interesting. But the emails came flowing in this week, so Perfect. Sorry to everybody. Amber, you want to take the first one?
Yeah, let's do it. This is from George. And last week, we were having a really heated conversation about Wikipedia and the potential end of Wikipedia in terms of how things were going. And George says, I kind of agree that Wikipedia became less important and also that it is partly inaccurate. And it's not easy to change articles or start new ones. As it is said, the Wikipedia members often give you the feeling your contribution is not welcome. Often you have to discuss what you have written or you are attacked. I totally stopped starting new articles because I don't have the time to discuss and defend my contribution if it's not welcome and I don't do it. There's a new and interesting project that tries to detect breaking news by how often a Wikipedia article is edited. It's called Wikipedia Live Monitor. And I've actually never heard of this before, Sarah. That's kind of interesting because I always notice that how quickly Wikipedia articles are updated when there's breaking news. And it's totally fascinating to me how fast stuff will happen there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is so... I could watch some sort of a live monitor for Wikipedia editing all day. What's cool about it is that, and it's going on really quick. I mean, you've got articles that are being edited right now or things that are being merged, article clusters that are being edited in short intervals. So most of it is just a stream of information. And a lot of it is somewhat nonsensical because, of course, you've got Wikipedia being edited in a variety of different languages. And there are certain search terms. It's like, I don't even know what that is. It doesn't really matter to me. You know, earlier there was somebody was doing a bunch of stuff on Miss USA 2014, or maybe it was Miss America. I don't remember which one. But it's like it kept popping up. And there were multiple people involved. And I was like, I wonder if two people are like fighting over, you know, some trivia
Probably.
That happened at the show. And it's happening right this second. Down at the bottom of the page, there's an area for, I think it's like breaking stories that if you scroll down, breaking news candidate article clusters right now, it doesn't seem like it's pulling anything like that. But that would be, I would assume, something in the category of, you know, if there was a big earthquake or you know, something that, you know, just didn't exist. And then it became an event that required some sort of an entry on Wikipedia that kind of turns into a different category. And I love it. I think this is so fun, George. I'm so
it's
glad that you,
cool.
You led us here because I've never heard of that before.
And Sarah, what was the stat that you mentioned last week that talked about, is it 90% of editors on Wikipedia are male?
Yes, that's
still
correct.
Still surprises me. Yeah.
It surprises me, and then I guess it doesn't at the same time, which the person who, the article that you and I talked about a little bit last week, you know, part of the reason that that stat was thrown out there was to say, and if you have a segment of a population that's so heavily, you know, male or female, but in this case male, you're going to end up getting articles that are maybe not, you're not necessarily going to get the same kind of fleshed out, well thought out Wikipedia entries on all kinds of articles. Now, I don't know if I would even be comfortable using some sort of an example as, well, this is something that males like more than females because I hate gender stereotypes, but there is some truth to that. You know, that is something that's going to, it's going to shape the experience for better or for worse, but it's definitely a factor.
Yeah, definitely. No, I was thinking about that a couple times this week and how the number was just so high. And it's interesting to hear George talk about how there's so many people kind of fighting on Wikipedia and a lot of arguing. And it doesn't seem to me to be this like really great place that it used to be necessarily. And I think that obviously could be to its detriment.
Yeah. Well, we got another email. This one from Marilyn. This one, it's pretty long, but I think it's really good. So I'll do my best to parse it. She says, "I'm writing to discuss your comments on LinkedIn. Sarah mentioned how she didn't really see how she could help somebody who wanted to connect with her on LinkedIn, but wasn't in her industry." Marilyn's right. I did say that. Like, what, you know, what's the point of connecting to just random people on LinkedIn? She says, "I decided to take some time off work to travel and volunteer last year. Now that I'm back on the job hunt, I've been attending job networking meetings. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. There are lots of resources available to help job seekers in this community. One of the things that these networking groups all have in common is they love LinkedIn and the power of building your network on LinkedIn. Marilyn says, "I've seen so many stories of how random connections ended up resulting in a job lead. I've been introduced to awesome contacts from what seemed random." So she says, you know, sometimes you just don't know. "They sent me a LinkedIn connection request. Turns out maybe I know their next door neighbor or somebody. And then you've got an in." She says, "I think maybe you, Sarah and Amber, your views on connections on LinkedIn might be a bit off because when you're employed regularly, you might forget how intense a job search can be." She says, "I've learned for sure that the way that you do job search these days is just different than the last time." She hasn't been doing this for, you know, she had a job for 13 years. She says, "Particularly in IT, LinkedIn is the tool that IT recruiters use to search for candidates. If you don't have a large strong network, your page won't be among the first that's displayed in a search. So in reality, by accepting a connection from somebody you don't think can help with their job search, you might be able to help after all."
That's a really good point. You know, it's I think about LinkedIn all the time too. And tomorrow morning, I'm speaking at an event here in Vancouver, and there's someone speaking there before me about LinkedIn. And Sarah, it's 20 tips to do a better job of connecting on LinkedIn.
Oh, funny.
And I'm so excited to go and sit in on that presentation. So hopefully next week on the show, I'll be able to share a little bit in terms of what I've learned, because I think, Marilyn is right. You know, sometimes when you have a network, you don't think, oh, well, why do I need another network, right? And I think for a lot of people, if they have had the same job, LinkedIn probably is a great place to start connecting with other people. So I haven't lost hope on it altogether, but maybe it's just not the right fit for us, because we do have Twitter and these other tools we use a lot. And that's kind of, for me, Sarah, if I didn't have a job or I was looking for work, I probably would go on Twitter first, I think.
Yeah. I think I'd probably have a better chance of reaching more people if I was like, hey, these are my skills. Who knows somebody? You know, if I was just starting a job search from scratch, LinkedIn would be in the mix. But yeah, I don't know that that would be the first place that I would count on to make my connections. But again, Marilyn makes a great point. She is in, you know, she's back on the job hunt. She was in the workforce for a long time, left because she wanted to. Now is like, okay, what are the tools available to me? At least where she lives, she sounds like she's got some pretty cool like job networking support. But if everyone is taking LinkedIn seriously, well, then I mean, it's a viable thing. And
yeah.
Amber, you do a fair amount of freelance work, but you certainly have been, you know, we both have been enjoying being employed for a long time, and yeah, I think I don't want to discount something that has been really successful or could be successful for somebody who needs a job.
Yeah, exactly. And I think due to the nature of our business, I mean, just we're out there all the time. We're always connecting. So LinkedIn may just not feel like the best place. But I think for people, you know, it probably is a very easy place to start and maybe not as intimidating as some of the other social networks there, right? Because it's all about your professional experience. And so it's kind of an easy way to connect with someone without feeling, you know, like it's not the right place to do that, right? I mean, that's what LinkedIn is kind of built for. So tomorrow, Sarah, I'm going to learn more about LinkedIn and share it next week. I can't wait.
Excellent. Lots of tips. I can't wait Lots either. Great.
We also have an email. This is a really good one from David Martinez, who says, my issue is this. I don't use Twitter often to post, but instead as a news and information source. I had been getting some less than pleasant battery life on my iPhone 5 lately and was struggling with it. Not thinking about that, a couple of weeks ago, I turned off Twitter for a day or so, so that I didn't have the Breaking Bad finale spoiled for me before I had a chance to see it. To my joy, my battery life improved a fair deal. I use my phone quite a bit throughout the day, and I always heard that what uses a phone's battery the most is lighting the screen. I realized that it must be all the tweet notifications lighting up my screen that was the culprit. My struggle is this. How do you grapple with following so many Twitter accounts or any social media accounts for that matter, when often only a certain percentage of their tweets or posts are of serious value to you? I'm sure it's a balancing act deciding whether the account posts mostly information that is useful to the follower versus deciding to give that account the axe. And I feel for David because the battery life issue, I'm on Twitter all the time. Nothing burns through my battery on my iPhone more quickly than that. But I don't know. For me, Sarah, I mean, as far as axing people, I can't remember the last time I ever axed anyone on Twitter. Do you do that regularly?
No, but I do mute a lot of people. And that is not something that I'm necessarily proud of. But... I was just thinking about this too this week, Amber, because Tweetbot, which is the app that I just like the best, it's just my Twitter client of choice. They came out with Tweetbot 3, I think it's Tweetbot 3 for the iPhone, and it's really great. And I went ahead and paid for it, and that's all fine and good. And I was just kind of like clicking around in my settings to see, oh, what's different about my new app. And I got to my mute settings, and it was like there was a list of all the people that I had muted, and it was like, oh, wait, why did I mute that person? I didn't even remember anymore, because one of the features is, do you want to mute for like 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, you know, custom amount of time, or okay. forever? And sometimes I just say forever, because it's like, I don't know if I want it to be a week or whatever. And the reason that Tweetbot does that is because, let's say I go to some sort of a conference and I just want to be like super engaged with other people at the conference, and we're using hashtags, and for whatever reason that's just not working for Amber, she could be like, you know what, I know Sarah's going to be there all week, I'll just go ahead and mute her.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not supposed to, you know, it doesn't have to be personal. It's just, it's like it's a workflow thing. But then you can mute someone forever, which basically means that you unfollow them, but they don't see that you unfollow them. And I use it kind of as a crutch, honestly, Amber, because of course I don't want to cause any grief with anybody if they can't DM me because they realize I'm not following them. But that's not necessarily what I feel like David should do, but that's, he has tools like that at his disposal that can make the experience a little bit more pleasant if he feels like he's sort of drowning in too much information.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I follow a ton of people, and literally, I mean, I've given up any hope of keeping up to what people have to say. So it's just a matter of just kind of skimming through what's there. And if I check in for 10 or 15 minutes at a time, I just accept the fact that I'm going to miss a lot of good stuff. And when I do check back in, I mean, it's not all going to be great quality. But there are people, I think, Sarah, I don't know if you find this, there are people who all see my stream, and I know, hey, when they're posting, it's usually something that's interesting, and it's good content. And that's also where lists become really handy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think David really, probably my best advice, because I do the same thing, Amber. I don't follow that many people, but I follow a lot of prolific tweeters. And, you know, first thing in the morning, I look at Twitter because I need to know if something crazy is breaking that's going to relate to any of the shows that I'm about to do. And then my Twitter usage really falls off during the day. I can't possibly keep up with everything. I don't even try. But there are certain people, you know, whether it's a good friend or somebody that I know, you know, I like their tweets, or I think that it's going to be useful news, that I'll either like type in their username into my search and just kind of go through stuff that they may have posted that I might have missed, or you add them to a list of, you know, the, I don't know, the, it's like your besties. It's your top six of Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And that way, even if you miss everything else, you know that you're not really missing anything by certain people. And lists are really helpful for that. And I think a lot of people underutilize lists.
Yeah,
they,
I think
you're
right.
They can be great for that.
Mm-hmm. Very handy. Now, speaking of Twitter, Sarah, this is a Twitter handle that I stumbled across. I think I also found this on Waxy Links. And every a couple times a month, I find something really cool there for the social hour. And this is for people who love the movie Back to the Future. And I know there are a lot out there. And it's from an organization or a group called the Hill Valley Project. And they are tweeting Back to the Future in real time. And so they've created all of the Twitter, they've created all the characters in Back to the Future, given them Twitter handles. And then they've basically taken the script and they're reenacting it through Twitter. It's very strange, but I had to share it because it was so odd.
That is so weird. I love it, though.
I do, too. Even the DeLorean has its own Twitter account where it's like, boom, boom, boom.
Oh, my! It's like a scene. It's like a scene by scene thing.
Yeah.
Like each line, everything.
Yeah. Marty McFly, Jennifer Parker, Biff Tannen. George McFly, and so they all, it's like the movie recreated as a Twitter conversation.
Oh, I love it too, because some of it is sort of, it's because it's Twitter is grouping it in the conversation view for Twitter, so some of it is a little bit flipped. Oh, that's amazing. I love it. That's so good.
It's so random. And seriously, I mean, if anyone wants to check out, it's just waxy.org/links. And I always find stuff there, Sarah, and I know you're also a fan and go there. I always find stuff there that I never see anywhere else. You know, stuff you see on Mashable and TechCrunch and ReadWrite. I see it in other places, right? But I'll go there and I'll see something that I know, you know what? This isn't going to be a Mashable for a few weeks. It's just kind of early. And it's a great place to go that has kind of a different twist to it.
I love it. I love it. Back to the Future in real time. That's easily the best thing I've seen. Because who doesn't like Back to the Future? I mean, that's just one of the greatest movies ever.
And seeing all the characters with their own Twitter handles, I mean, it just, it's kind of fun to look at it like that, right? That's, you know, Marty McFly with his own Twitter handle and then pieces of the script. And it's you just remember all those really classic lines from the movie. So that's a fun one.
I love it. That's a great one. Good find, Amber. We also want to be able to know about your finds as well. You might be watching or listening to us and be like, "Well, that's cool, but I have something way cooler that I found 2 days ago, and they should have talked about that." You can let us know, because of course this is a community effort. We are a community here. We're social people. The Social Hour at twit.tv is our email address. You can also leave us a voicemail at 2626 SOCIAL. See what we did there? 2626 Social is our Google voicemail box. If you want to just drop us a voice line, or you can record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link. We haven't gotten any of those in a while, so, you know, I don't know. Put the camera on yourself. Show us.
Or make us a
love.
Front back. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Or you could do
a front back.
Yeah, do a front back and send it to us. Let's see where you are when you watch the show. That would be fun. That would be great. Or recreate an entire movie on Twitter and then send us the link and we'll easily talk about it.
Oh, yeah. That could take some time. Maybe you start with the front back. It's a little easier.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad, we'll take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love Squarespace because it's not just a blogging platform. It's not just a hosting platform. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it so easy to create a professional website or online portfolio and then maintain it with beautiful templates, with world-class support, with great customization tools. I mean, the whole thing is just a joy to use. Oh, Squarespace has always been this way, but they've got more. They're constantly improving their platform. They've got more templates than ever. Their designs just look modern. These are the sorts of websites that, you know, you'd want your website to look at. They have 20 new beautiful templates. If you haven't been there in a while, I really, really suggest you check it out and see what some of your options might be. They've won design awards, multiple design awards for this stuff. But probably more importantly than anything, it's just easy to get up and running. Squarespace is easy to use. If you need help, the team is there 24/7 to answer your questions. But it's not difficult. You can pretty much get up and running, but using just a template with very little work on your part. Or if you're like, I love this template, but I really want to customize it, you can do that as well. It's all really up to you. It's also inexpensive. $8 a month, that's what accounts start at, and includes a free domain if you sign up for a year. So you just, whatever, you know, you might have a domain name that you've got hanging around, or you'd like something new, and it's sort of an all-in-one thing. And it's mobile-ready. Every design includes a mobile, unique experience that matches the overall style of your website. So somebody looks at your website on a big old desktop monitor versus an iPhone versus, you know, a laptop or some sort of tablet. It's always going to look good. It's going to have a unified look. Search engine optimized. Hosting is included. And you can start a trial today. We're all about trials here because we want you to go in and try something out before we tell you to pay for it. So start a trial. You don't need a credit card. Just start building your website. Put something together. Feel good about it. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, because you're probably going to be like, this is awesome, I love using it, make sure you use the offer code SOCIALHOUR11. So that's SOCIALHOUR and then the number 11, and you'll get 10% off. It's our little gift to you for showing your support for the Social Hour. Thanks to Squarespace for their support of our show. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. Start that free trial today. Social Hour 11. All right, Amber, before we finish up, what's our rad or fad today?
Okay, it's pet-oriented, Sarah.
Oh,
does that make
you
happy?
Already. Yeah.
I don't have a pet, but I was reading about this particular app, and it said that nearly 3.5 million pets are lost each year. And unfortunately, as many as 80% of dogs and 98% of cats are never reunited with their families. So kind of surprised about that stat, and thought this app was neat. It's coming out for the iPhone on November 5th. And the idea is that it uses facial recognition technology to be able to identify cats or dogs who are lost. So basically, you would take a photo of your pet, you would save it with PIP, which is the name of the app company, and then if someone found your pet, maybe they were taken to the vet or the Humane Society, they could go into this database and they could search to try to find that pet using facial recognition. So I thought it was kind of interesting, Sarah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, all joking aside about, you know, facial recognition in pets,
yeah,
anything that would help somebody relocate a lost pet, I mean, anything helps.
Exactly.
And so this is very cool, but it's like, it's not a cool app just to be cool. I mean, this is something that can, I mean, it's a matter of life and death in some circumstances. I mean, if your pet is lost, that is extremely traumatic, and you want to do whatever you can. I think this is a great idea. I wish I'd thought
of it. It's very cool. Yeah, I mean, they write, they say tags fall off, tattoos get rubbed off, microchips move around in an animal's body, and they name all of the reasons why simply taking a picture and having the facial recognition technology would work great in a database so that someone could just upload a picture and then find the lost animal. I mean, it's almost like, I can't believe we don't have this already, to be honest with you. But based on the story that I read on Fast Company, you know, it seems like it's pretty new technology. And I thought it was kind of rags. I know people who lose pets and it's a horrible, horrible thing. So if there's any way you can use almost like a social network and technology to really improve that experience so people are reunited faster, I think it's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah. I agree. You know, somebody in chat says, well, it's not like this is replacing chipping your pets. And that's true. But again, if it's not something that is, you know, 100% reliable, you want to find alternative methods to reunite people with pets. And, you know, time is of the essence in situations like this. So
yeah.
I think Pip, big P, little I, big P, is really, really cool.
And imagine if a lot of people were using it, right? I mean, you have that potential that, hey, you know what, if there's a chip in an animal, I have no idea what to do if I find that animal. But if I know a lot of people are using PIP and I just have to take a picture and potentially find that animal, then it's a lot easier for everyone, right? So, yeah, that was kind of interesting. And I had to include some pets in the show, Sarah. It wouldn't be the Social Hour without a cat or dog reference.
Yay, Amber. You always know how to make me smile at the end of the show.
I'm coming around.
Yeah, you know. Honestly, I thank you. I thank everybody, and thanks to everybody who watched our show. Certainly, all of those of you who watched it live, because not only is it sort of late in the day, but it's a whole day early. So we've got, you know, we've got the great guys in the audience, great guys and gals in the audience who are like, yeah, we'll watch the Social Hour on a weird day where Amber's traveling. For everybody else who are watching us after the fact, Amber, are you going to be back in Toronto this time next week?
Yeah, I sure will. So I'll be back every Friday for the rest of the year. I will be in my studio, so I won't have any internet issues or anything like that, Sarah. So it should be all good. But today we got through it, and nothing too disastrous. So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, me too. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. A reminder that we are live on Fridays normally at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. It's where you can catch up on anything you may have missed, subscribe to the show. I don't know, send a friend there and say, Sarah and Amber sometimes say some intelligent things. Maybe you should pay attention to them and, you know, be part of the show or write them or whatever. You can find our show on iTunes, all that good stuff. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.